Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
We're back for a brand new week of Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. I'm always happy to be along with you on the afternoon drive, and well, we have a short week because Friday, it's Pioneer Day, so we're going to be taking off. I'll be out of the studio on Friday, so we got a lot to get in over the next 3 to 4 days here on Drive Time Sports. A lot going on both on the local and national level, and in fact, today we are going to talk local football. In less than 1 month, the Emory Spartans will kick things off here on KOAL. Emory's got a pretty difficult schedule right out of the gate, back-to-back road games. And that first road game is a long trip to Millard. And like I said, we're about 3 weeks away from that right here on KOAL. So we're going to talk to Coach John Famalo today. Emory had a scrimmage last week with Carbon. A couple of other scrimmage games on top of that. They've gone to a few 7-on-7 camps. And so it's been a very busy summer for Emory High School football. Also, coming up tomorrow, they're going to have a youth camp for kids in grades 1 through 8. This will be a two-day camp. It'll start tomorrow morning. It'll run through Wednesday. And so Coach John Famalo is going to join us next segment on the show to talk a bit about that. We'll give you the local recap of what went down over the weekend. The Helper American Legion baseball season, it came to a close with back-to-back losses. A loss on Friday to Harriman, a loss on Saturday to Stansbury. We'll get you the recap on that in just a few moments. And then tomorrow, we're going to be joined by Dakota Cincineros. He'll join us to recap the entire season. It was a fun season for the Helper Legion baseball squad. Up and down, they had their moments, but ultimately it ends a little early this year in the second round of the state championship tournament. And so all that's coming up on the show a little bit later. Plus, we have to talk Major League Baseball. There's a lot going on in the Major League ranks. This week, we actually get the start of the season Thursday. We get a doubleheader on ESPN. I can't wait for it. Yankees, Nationals, Dodgers, Giants. We've been talking about this, it seems like, for a month now. In anticipation, we had some preseason games. That's what I guess we have to call them. We can't call them spring training games because we're towards the end of July. But the crack of the bat just sounds different with no fans in the stands. The players running around the base pads, you can hear the cleats in the dirt. You can hear the player chit-chat. And if you watched any of these games over the weekend, I watched the Dodgers Diamondbacks, Cody Bellinger cracked a home run, and there was just something unique about it. You can hear everything. Is it different? Yes, it's a much different experience. But I think I'm going to like this. Really, I think I'm going to enjoy watching baseball with no fans in the stands. Maybe not to the same extent of when fans are in the stands, because, again, there's the electricity of the fan roar when something happens. I mean, if Bellinger goes yard at Dodger Stadium, that place becomes a zoo. Right? If Gerrit Cole's on the mound at Yankee Stadium in a crucial moment, that place is going to be rowdy. That's not going to be the case, but it changes the dynamic of the game. And so Thursday cannot come soon enough. I am so ready for some Major League Baseball. We'll talk about that later on, as well as where are the Toronto Blue Jays going to play? They can't play in Canada because of COVID-19. They may be sharing a stadium with the Pittsburgh Pirates. That's another topic that we can get into in just a bit. Also this week, we will have preseason NBA games. Couple of scrimmage contests. In fact, Thursday night, the Utah Jazz will jump into a scrimmage game. The Jazz will have a scrimmage on Sunday and I believe Monday as well. One of the weekend scrimmages is like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Couple of opportunities for this team to find their footing. Some really good news out of the NBA. How would this bubble work? Would it be safe for the players? Well, the NBA and the Players Union announced today that they had tested 346 players in the bubble after July 13th, and they have had 0 positive tests. Now, the league announced its initial batch of bubble tests on July 13th. They had two test positive out of the 322 players that they had tested total. This is a good sign. So, you do the math, that's 668 tests. Two have come back positive, and the last 346 have been negative. The NBA has done this right. And I remember the conversations, and it's still early, I get it, but I remember the conversations about how unsafe this would be. Look, they are literally in the safest place in the United States of America right now. This bubble in Orlando is the safest place possible. Every precaution is being taken at the moment to ensure that these guys are safe and we get a season. Not saying that we're going to get zero tests the rest of the way. It's very possible that a player is going to pop up positive for COVID, and it's possible that it could spread. I'm not saying it's impossible, but this is a great sign to start things off. Okay, and it is so much better than what Major League Baseball has in place, and apparently it's a hell of a lot better than what the NFL has in place as well. Because the NFL over the weekend had a campaign of players tweeting at it saying that they needed to be safer with the protocol as training camp is set to open over the next couple of weeks. The NFL and its players today reached an agreement on the testing aspect of the protocol ahead of training camp. The agreement between the NFL and the Players Association is going to require daily COVID-19 testing for the first 2 weeks of training camp. After 2 weeks, if the positive test rate is below 5%, the league would scale back the testing to every other day. If the positive test rate is not below 5%, they're going to continue with the daily testing until it falls to that number. So the NFL is now putting in its protocol for COVID-19. If at any point during training camp the positivity rate rises to 5% or higher, that triggers a return to daily testing. Pretty simple. Upon arriving at the team facility for the first time, players and employees will be required to test negative twice before being allowed in. So basically, you show up on day one, you take a test, you go home. You show up on day two, you take a test, you go home. If both come back negative, you're good to go. Now, my biggest question mark with all the COVID-19 testing is, how long does it take to get the test results back? Okay, the NFL is saying it's going to take not even 24 hours. They're going to get the results back within 24 hours. And the NFL is now contracted with a specific laboratory to handle its tests. And they have said multiple times over the past few months that they want to remain responsible for not taking up too high of a share of the available tests in any other market. So by hiring their own personal laboratory, which I believe is BioReference, that's how they're going to handle these tests moving forward to make it safe or as safe as possible for players. But again, I'm going back to the way the NBA is doing it, and the NBA is in a completely different realm. The National Basketball Association can take over a bubble. They can take over facilities because you can stack 20 gyms in a place like Disney World. However they're going to do this, we're going to see it over the next couple of weeks. But the NBA has the ability to take all of its players and all of its tier 1 or 2 employees and place it in a bubble. The NFL, Major League Baseball, simply cannot do this. Rosters are too big. And so when everyone was freaking out about the way the NBA was going about things, I truly didn't understand it. You know, as far as the player amenities and everything that's happening in Florida, it's just something that no other league can offer. The WNBA could do this. The NBA can do this. Hockey can't do it. Baseball and football, they can't do it. It's literally basketball. Even if you look at the PGA Tour, it's borderline impossible because the amount of traveling that you have to do unless you want to play in the same course over and over and over, right? The only sport that can offer this is basketball. I don't know how safe the NFL is going to be. I don't know what the positive test rates are going to be once players start taking them daily. But the NFL has already canceled two of its 4 preseason weeks. And the players want all preseason games to be canceled this year. The players also proposed a training camp period that would limit the first 21 days to just strength and conditioning work only. The NFL is trying to take steps to make this as safe as possible along with the players, but there are just certain things that they can't do that, say, the NBA can. And so today's report of seeing the NBA coming back with zero positive tests out of 346 that have been administered, I think that's going to be a reoccurring theme. I really do. Now we can have a conversation on what the NBA has basically done wrong. And that's really getting political, and it's coming from the owners now. It's something that I would expect from the players. You know, the players wanted to be able to put their social injustice slogans on their jerseys. If it's Black Lives Matter, if it's Say My Name, whatever it is, players had that option. And a number of players decided to go that route. A couple of, well, high-profile players such as LeBron James decided not to. They're going to keep their names on the back of their jerseys. That was a big topic that I didn't get into last week. I would expect this from the players. I would not, however, expect this from the owners. And that's what we got over the weekend as Mark Cuban got in a Twitter war with radio talk show host Mark Davis and also Senator Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz put a statement out that said the NBA is telling everyone who stands for the flag or supports their cops or veterans to go away. He said that in, I'm paraphrasing. Mark Cuban got very angry. He went right back out after Ted Cruz. Then Ted Cruz started bringing up the NBA stance on everything that's happening in China. And look, this is something that the league just simply does not need at the moment. I am so excited for basketball to return next week because I miss watching basketball. I'm sure you're excited for the NBA to return next week and for Major League Baseball to return this week because you miss watching the game, right? That's what we miss. I can go anywhere in the world right now and get my political talk. If I'm pro or anti something, I can find some sort of conversation that suits my belief somewhere. The NBA is dealing with this now with owners, and that's going to affect business, and that's not what the league needs. I'm sorry. The players, it's completely different. As an owner, Mark Cuban bringing this into it now, going at it with senators? The NBA needs to stay away from this. I'm just excited to get basketball back, and that's what we talk about here on Drive Time Sports. We don't focus on any of that other stuff because, quite frankly, I don't really care about it in the 1 hour a lot of time that I have to talk sports with you 6 days a week here on Drive Time Sports. We're going to break for just a moment. Again, the local sports recap is coming your way. I want to talk Major League Baseball. The options for the Toronto Blue Jays as we get set for the return of baseball. You know, you get an advertisement this Thursday, 5:30. We get the Yankees and Nationals. It's a beautiful thing. Baseball is coming back. But if you're a Toronto Blue Jay fan, you don't know where they're going to be playing because Canada said no. We'll talk about that. We'll also go over some of the exciting tidbits as we gear up for the baseball season on the show today. And again, Coach John Famala will join us in just a moment when we return. We're live from the Auto Farm Studios right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
You watch the games, you follow the team, you wear the colors with pride, and you have questions, and only one man can answer them. Get the answers to the tough questions.
It's time for some local football talk here on Drive Time Sports. We're less than a month away from the start of the season. It's amazing, right, how fast time flies. August 14th, right here on KOAL. The Emory Spartans will travel on the road to take on Millard. That'll be the first of two road contests to get the season off and rolling for Emory. And the offseason workouts, it's been very busy for the Spartan team. They've gone to a couple of 7-on-7 camps. Most recently played a scrimmage game with the Carbon Dinos this past Thursday. They also had scrimmages with a number of other schools. And then tomorrow and Wednesday, they'll play host to a youth camp. So again, very busy right now for the Emory football squad. And joining us right now over the phone to talk about that and more, we have head coach John Famala. And coach, as always, a pleasure. Thank you.
Hey, appreciate having me on, Jordan.
Definitely, coach. It's the second time we've talked to you during the summer months, and I know things are really starting to pick up as far as the high school football season is concerned. We're less than a month away from the opening game on the road against Millard, and you guys have been very active, be it 7-on-7 camps or just scrimmages, coach. It's been a very active summer for the boys.
Yeah, it's been a lot of the same, you know, and I think it's helped the kids get a little bit back to normal, you know, things that they're used to doing and getting football being one of those. And so, again, we had our football camp last week and had some scrimmages, and so it was good for the kids to be able to kind of get back into the groove of things and start competing and having some fun.
Now, obviously, you guys went toe-to-toe with Carbon as far as the scrimmages are concerned, but that wasn't the only scrimmage you guys had, Coach, in talking with you. You guys also went up against Millard. You guys saw Duchesne. You saw Beaver. And so just looking at the four schools that you guys have seen from a scrimmage standpoint, how do you feel the boys are matching up?
I was really happy. I was pleased that way we played as far as the physicality. That's we played Beaver, Duchesne, those types of teams that are really physical. I think it was a good matchup for us to be able to kind of see where we're at and gauge. And I thought our kids, answered the bell and did a great job that way. Duchesne and Beaver, wing T teams, we don't see a ton of that in our region, with the exception of maybe South Sevier and then a Grand team that runs, a little bit more physical style offenses. So it was good for our kids to be able to see, that type of offense and, somebody running at you and coming at you continually. And so, but I thought our kids did a good job that way. And Millard runs a traditional spread, so it was good to see that. And, we have them in the first game, so it was good to be able to see what they have and see what they're doing and kind of see where we stand and, maybe set a tone for what's going to come up. And so the kids know from both sides, from Millard and our side, what they're going to be up against. And so I'm the same with Carbon. So I think as a gauge for us, I thought, I was really happy with how things went in our camp and, how we competed. And for the most part, we came out unscathed, and that's probably the most important thing, that we, no injuries or anything like that, major injuries that would affect our season and the kids.
Yeah, I mean, that's always a cause for concern, and knock on wood, it seems like it's always something that's bothered us in the past, Coach. But as far as the physicality of it goes, we can talk about what we have coming back in the trenches. I know it's been a good summer for the boys up front, be it if we're talking about the front seven defensively or the front five on the offensive side of the ball. From all accounts of what I've read and from what I have seen, it's been a very, very good summer for those boys.
Yeah. Again, 7-on-7 camp. We took a big man group over there and had two big man lineman challenge guys teams over there, and we ended up taking first place, which is we had a lot of kids that competed as freshmen, and we've kind of figured this what it takes to be able to compete, and so it was nice to see them them end up on top. And so our big man won the big man challenge over there in Man's High, and then. But when I transitioned into our camp, I think a lot of that confidence they had and, being able to win that competition over there carried into what we were able to do when I got to the scrimmages. And so, I was really happy about that, that we've got, three or four seniors on that line, and we've got some juniors that are competing, pushing those kids. And so, on both sides of the ball, offensively and defensively, I'm really happy and that we have some depth and we have some kids competing, and that, again, we have that physical nature to be able to run the ball and hopefully stop the run when the time comes.
You mentioned a couple of things there, Coach, that stood out to me. For one, learning to compete, and I know that that's something that when you struggle like we have over the last couple of years, I know that's something that you have to put a big emphasis on. You mentioned that last go around, and then you talk about the depth as well. Well, it's a lot easier to compete if you're not dead tired come the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and a lot of it, again, we've started, sophomores and juniors, and so, a year of maturity helps these kids a ton. And so now I've got, probably 14, 15 seniors that, are playing quite a bit, and I've got about that number of juniors that are, right there, chomping at the bit to be able to get some varsity time, too. And so being able to have the maturity of a junior and a senior versus, now you're going down to a sophomore and sometimes even a freshman, that makes a big difference in the makeup of your team and, how you can match physicality with another team.
Coach, as far as some of the skill positions go, I know last year we got to see Riker Jensen for a very small amount of time in actual varsity games. He was just a sophomore taking the reins last year. He suffers a collarbone injury. We don't see him the rest of the year, and I know he's been underneath center for you guys as far as these scrimmages. How has Riker looked up to this point in your mind?
I thought Riker has done a great job. First game against Beaver, he struggled a little bit, and a lot of it was nerves. Again, a kid that was injured last year, played three quarters of a ball game, a varsity ball game, and haven't seen much action since. And so I think his nerves were a little high at the time during that game. But as the games went on, we played the other teams, he really settled in. You could see, again, him being able to relax and see some things. And, had a phenomenal job against Miller and Carbon. I thought he just threw the ball well and was relaxed in the pocket. And Miller Lyon did a great job giving him time, and that helps when you have time to throw the ball. And he was able to throw some strikes, and he looked really well.
I mean, athletically, this is a kid that allows you to open up the playbook a tad bit more, right? I know that this was something from an athleticism standpoint. There was a big drop-off last year when Riker went down.
Yeah, he's a kid that can extend plays with his legs. Again, he's got that big arm. And so one of the things we got to do is just kind of get him to, not throw the ball away. That's what I felt good about. In the camp is that he progressively got better about taking care of the ball. That first game he struggled a little bit, and probably attributed to nerves, but once he settled down and was able to get the game to slow down a little bit for him and start reading some things, he did a great job. But again, athletically, the kid's got a lot of tools to be able to be a good quarterback and really help us, use the assets that we have on the edges with our receivers and our running backs.
Coach, if we talk about more of the skill position players, I guess I can kind of relate this to the defensive side of the ball as well. We've been pretty good defensively, specifically in the secondary over the last little while. And obviously, you'll be using kids both ways. So if you look at the skill positions that Riker has at his dispense, who are some kids that have kind of caught your eye this summer?
I thought, who had a really good camp for us, I felt, was Josh Olson, Jace Mangum, again, two juniors. Quentin Sorensen, Jax Madsen, trying to think who else we have on the edge. I thought those kids had a really good camp, and Jace Curtis and out of the backfield, and we had Jerick McDonald, a kid that was injured last year that kind of caught in between a lot of different positions, but he ran the ball for us a little bit to this camp, and he looked really good. And so those kids, again, playing both sides of the ball, I thought I had a really good camp, and give you a lot of comfort knowing you got kids out there that have some athleticism and can catch the ball and can make some things happen.
Coach John Famalo again of the Emory Spartan football team, our guest right now. Coach, we can talk more about the remainder of the offseason here in just a few moments, but before that, you guys do have a big youth camp coming up. It's kind of a tradition with the Emory High School football team. This will run over the next 2 days beginning tomorrow, and so an opportunity to give some youth a chance to learn the philosophies, I guess, a bit of the football team.
Yeah, when I took over as a young man, I remember, attending Emory High football camps, and one thing I wanted to get back started. And so something we ran for the past 5 years, and, it's been a really enjoyable time to be able to get younger kids, first through eighth graders, and kind of just educate them a little bit about football and kind of go over fundamentals and, let them know that football is fun, that it is a physical sport, but there's a lot of fun that can be had with it. And so getting them amongst my coaching staff and use a lot of our players to be able to, help coach these kids and teach them a little bit about football and, kids that hopefully when they show up on Friday nights, they can, see these kids that they've been coached by or, went to this camp and look up to these kids. And so it's a good opportunity for us just to do something good for these young kids, be able to, help them love football like we do.
And as far as the kids on the team that get to help out, obviously the younger guys that will come out to this camp, they love getting instruction from the current players. But it's always been my thought, Coach, that these players, they love coaching some of these younger kids as well. It gives them an opportunity to finally be the coach.
Yeah, I think it's fun to see them in those, put those shoes on and put them in a position to be able to be a leader and help these kids coach them up. They've been coached for, 4 years, and so to see some of the same things and hear the same things out of their mouths that we're trying to tell them and kind of hopefully reemphasize the things that they're doing to help these kids. So it's just a good opportunity for these kids to get back and help these young kids.
Coach, before I let you go, we got to jump back over to the offseason schedule for this team. We are less than a month away from the start, August 14th, on the road against Millard. So between now and then, what does it look like for you and the team?
We've got summer weights finishing up this week on Monday and Wednesday, actually, because we're giving the kids Thursday and Friday off. But we start our official practices actually start next Monday. I wish I had the date in front of me. What date are we at today?
27.
Yeah. 27th, our first official practice. We start heat acclimation again to start padding up that following week. So from the 27th to the end of the month, into August, we'll have our heat acclimation. We'll be practicing once a day at 5:30. Following that, we have our 2 days, and then our black and gold game that following Friday, and then again, we're prepping for Millard that next week. So, like you say, we're less than a month away to be able to, you know, play our first game. So, still a lot of things to do, but we're progressing. Hopefully, we can continue to progress as we move forward with the practices next week and moving forward.
It's definitely full head of steam. There's no doubt about it. Coach, we'll end with this. We'll jump back over to the youth camp for anyone who wants to participate in it. Basically, just show up tomorrow morning, get it at 8 o'clock to register, correct?
Yeah, so our registration starts today at 8 to 8:30. We'll try to start camp at 8:30 to 10:30. It's hot, so just ask the kids to bring a water bottle to deal with the COVID-19 stuff. Again, can't really share water bottles and things like that. We'll have some water jugs that they can fill their water bottles with, but if they can bring their own water bottles, it'd be helpful. Again, we're going to give the kids a camp t-shirt, and just be going 2 hours on Tuesday and Wednesday. We'll be 8:30 to 10:30 as well, and so again, just invite all those kids and parents to come out. It'll be $30 a kid if you have more than one kid, $25 per kid, so try to help you as much as we can, be able to give these kids an opportunity to learn a little football.
Coach, definitely a great time. I always appreciate you making out the time to join us on air, and I'm sure we'll be talking again real soon.
Hey, thanks, Jordan. I really appreciate it.
That's Coach John Famalo again of the Emory Spartan football team, taking out the time to join us here on Drive Time Sports. Do not forget, Emory football all season long right here on KOAL. You'll also be able to stream the games live by visiting CastleCountryRadio.com. We've got a break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up. When we return, we're going to move over, talk Major League Baseball. We had some preseason games. I guess that's what we call them in baseball. We can't call them spring training. We had preseason games over the weekend. We're gearing up for the start of the season this Thursday. We'll talk about that and more right after this.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
We're back on Drive Time Sports from the Auto Forum Studios on 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Bring in Travis Anderson as we talk some Major League Baseball. Are you ready for Thursday?
I am excited. Ready to go. It's about time, so let's get it rolling.
It seems like it's been forever since we've had actual games to talk about, but it is popping up, and there are some questions still, though, regarding the Major League Baseball season. For instance, are we going to get a full season and a postseason?
Yeah, I believe so. I think we should. Gotta be, you know, positive about it, but I think we're gonna get the 60 games, the postseason, so we should be good.
All right, well, let's start talking. We'll go through each division. We'll see if we agree on who's going to win the division, and then I'm gonna throw over and unders out there to you, because I believe a 60 game over and under is going to look a little bit different. So let's begin in the AL East. New York Yankees, odds on favorite right now. If you were a betting man, you would get -300 on New York. New additions, Gerrit Cole, you got James Paxton, Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, all look as if they're healthy. Luis Severino's out for the year, but New York has one of the deepest rotations. I don't think there's any doubt about that, because we're talking Cole, Paxton, Tanaka, Jay Happ. So it seems like the pieces are in place. New York, any other reason to believe they're not going to win the division?
No, the Yankees are going to win the AL East. They're the favorite. Second in that division's Tampa Bay.
No doubt.
After that, it's a drop-off. I mean, that division isn't that good. So for the Yankees, if they don't win that division, it's an embarrassing and it's disappointing.
You know, I get what you're saying, but had Tampa Bay not lost the likes of Tommy Pham,
I'd have picked him.
That's big.
I would have been all over Tampa Bay, but they just don't have...
Avisel Garcia leaves?
Yeah, they don't have the pieces over a short 60-game... The talented team is going to, you know, win out, I believe, in this short season, so that's the Yankees.
Over-under. I'm going to go 37 wins. Over-under. Because I think 37 wins you a division title.
I'll go under 35 wins, so under.
I'm going to go the over. I think they get to 38... Anywhere between 38 and 40.
I think Tampa Bay's right there. I think Tampa Bay's 35 wins.
Yeah, I think Tampa Bay's right there, too. Obviously, the second-best team. We both agree on that. That's a huge drop. I'll say the Yankees win 35 games.
Toronto, Boston, Baltimore. Do any of those teams win 30 games?
No.
Eh, hard to disagree.
Toronto's got to find a place to play.
Right, right. We'll get to that in just a bit. Let's move on to the Central. Minnesota would be the odds-on favorite in this division, but things are a little bit more murky. It's not like the AL East. If you were to bet on Minnesota right now, you would get plus 120. All right, so I like those betting odds just a little bit. It's saying that it's not really that clear. Don't forget, they have Josh Donaldson, heart of the lineup, right? To me, this is the team to beat in this division. I think they win it. I think they win it overwhelmingly. I think they probably get a 4-5 game cushion. I think the Indians will be right there, but the Indians, to me, they're close to a 30-win team.
This is our first disagreement already. I'm going Cleveland. I like Cleveland to win this division. Then the Twins and probably the White Sox. I think the Twins and the White Sox are going to compete for the second spot.
Okay, here's my problem with Cleveland. Trevor Bauer, gone.
Mm-hmm.
Corey Kluber, gone. Okay? Shane Bieber is now the starter. He is the man in the Cleveland Indian rotation.
Got Clevinger.
You got Clevinger. They may be close. I still think that I'm going to go with Minnesota, and I think they win this by 4-5 games.
I think
Minnesota did more in the offseason. Now, here's the thing. If Cleveland can sit within striking distance, and this is why I don't hate this pick, okay? They face the Tigers, the White Sox, and the Pirates over their final 11 games. So all Cleveland has to do is hang around. That's all the Indians need to do. So I don't think it's a terrible pick, but they better get off to a quick start. And if they do get off to a quick start, it's not too shabby, the final 11 games of the season. Now, while we talk about the Indians and the Twins, really a sexy pick is the Chicago White Sox.
Yeah, I just can't find myself picking Chicago. It's a sexy pick, like you said. A lot of people are on that White Sox bandwagon. I can't do it. I just don't think there's enough there.
So the White Sox, look, they added Edwin Encarnacion and Yasmani Grandal, who's one of the best hitting catchers in the game. We know this. Jose Abreu.
They got a nice couple bats in that lineup.
They brought in Dallas Keuchel as well.
It's tempting, but I'll go Cleveland, Minnesota, Chicago.
I'm going to go Minnesota, Cleveland, Chicago. I still think that the White Sox are third in that division. I think they make some big strides. AL West, Houston's division to win. Yay or nay?
It is, but I think there's a lot going on with that franchise and organization right now. I'm going Oakland.
Their first 34 games. They face Houston just three times in the opening month of the season.
That helps.
Right? That matters.
It does.
It definitely matters. The A's, they were successful outside of their divisional matchups with Houston last year. They were 8-11 against Houston. They were very successful when they didn't have to play Houston. Okay, so when you take a look at what Oakland brings to the table, Chapman and Olsen are two guys that I love. They're two guys that we have talked a lot about here on the show with Bill Lasky, with him being from the Bay Area. The A's are going to have the offensive firepower. I think they get it done. That's going to be my bold prediction. I'm going to take the A's to win the AL West. I'm taking Oakland.
I agree with you. I like Oakland. I think there's just too much with Houston going on. A lot of drama surrounding that franchise, and I just believe they're going to come crashing down with everything that's happened, so I'll take Oakland.
I think they're both in the playoffs.
Yeah.
They're both playoff teams.
Houston's going to get one of the wild card spots, but they're not going to win the division.
So do the Angels get a playoff spot?
No. I think the Angels are 30-30.
Over-under wins for, I'm going to go Oakland because we both picked them to win the division. 35, over-under.
Yeah, 35. I'll go right at 35.
So 35-25 wins the AL West.
Yes.
And then you're having Houston right behind?
Houston right behind, two games back, three games back at most. But yeah, and then it's the Angels and the Mariners.
Let's jump to the National League. First year we have the DH, and that does matter. That makes a world of a difference, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's helpful to a lot of teams that have a lot of bats, but, you know, not enough positions to, you know, fill that void.
Like the Dodgers.
Cincinnati has a ton of outfielders, so now one of those guys can DH.
I would have said Atlanta a week ago. I'm not saying Atlanta anymore. I think the Braves have a little bit of a flaw in the outfield. But still, I like what they have. Freddie Freeman, Ozzie Albies, Ronald Acuna. Obviously, you know what division we're going to start with here. We're going to go with the NL East. When you look at Atlanta, to me, there's no reason to believe this team does not win the division, although the Washington Nationals are the defending World Series champs, so you have to consider them as well. To me, it's a two-team race. I believe the Atlanta Braves will finish around 500. I really do. I think they're going to be anywhere from 30 to 33 wins. I'm going to say the Washington Nationals probably hover around that same spot. Point being, teams are going to beat up each other in the AL and NL East. I think this is where it really affects a team like Atlanta having some dull spots in the outfield, and it's also where a bat like Yasiel Puig or a Nick Markakis would make a world of a difference. This is going to be a fun, fun division, maybe the most interesting division of all, because you have the Mets that I don't believe are that far behind either.
No, I could see Atlanta, Washington, and the Mets within, you know, 1 to 2 games of one another. For me, though, I think in the end it comes down to me taking the Braves. I like their lineup just a little bit more.
It's the best division in baseball.
Yes, those three right there are going to battle, and like you said, with the matchup to cross over to the AL East makes things tough.
Yeah, because you have Philly as well within this division, and I think Philly wins more than... I think Philly gets over 30 wins.
Yeah, Philly's going to be right there as well.
Yeah, Bryce Harper, JT Realmuto, Rhys Hoskins, Andrew McCutchen's going to be back. He's going to be healthy. You look at that pitching rotation, Zach Wheeler, Aaron Nola, Jake Arrieta. To me, this is the best division in Major League Baseball, and it will be the funnest to watch matching it up with the opposition in the AL East. This is going to be the best type of baseball. This is the best brand of baseball you're going to get this season.
It's going to be the tightest race from day one to the end of the season. I'll go Atlanta by one game over Washington.
I'm going to take the Nats. I'm going to take Washington. Young, Strasburg is back. Yes, I know they lost Anthony Rendon. I'm still going to roll with Washington in this division. I think Philly and Atlanta battle it out for a wild card spot. And you know what? Maybe both wild card spots come from this division. It's not out of the realm of possible.
No, it's not. I think I might tend to agree with you because I think the West, it's the Dodgers, but we'll get into that in a second. So I think both wild card spots do come out of the East.
National League Central.
You know where I'm going.
I know you're a Reds fan, but take the Reds hat off for a second, and let's talk about the Chicago Cubs.
Okay, a lot of people are high on them.
I know. Right now, if you were to place a bet, the Reds would be the betting favorite. They're both plus 210, but the Reds over-under is set at 32, and the Cubs are sitting at 31.5, so the Reds would have to be the odds-on favorite. Are we sleeping on the Chicago Cubs? Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, Javi Baez, who I have picked to win the MVP over the last 2 years. That hasn't come to fruition. Kyle Schwarber. It's one of the best lineups, power-wise, offensively, in the National League. It doesn't compare to a team we're going to talk about in a moment, but it's still very good.
Still solid. Yeah, maybe we are sleeping on them just a little bit. I think the Reds' schedule to start the season helps them to maybe they can jump out to a lead. I'm going to take Cincinnati because I like their starting pitching a little bit more than the Cubs, but I think the Cubs and the Reds are going to battle for 1 and 2.
You know who the X factor is for the Cubs, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but Yu Darvish. Because Yu Darvish was pretty good at the end of last season for the Cubs.
He wasn't bad.
No, he wasn't bad at all. He kind of got back to his old form. And John Lester, I think, is fine. You have Kyle Hendricks. I know Jose Quintana hurts his thumb a little, and that's going to mess things up a little bit. But then you look at Craig Kimbrell, and you look at Jason Kipnis, and we're looking at some of the additions for the Cubs here. I think we're not taking the Cubs seriously enough.
I'll take Cincinnati. I don't trust the Cubs bullpen. That was their downfall a year ago, and I still think they have issues in their bullpen.
Yeah, it's hard to trust the Reds, though. You know this better than anyone.
Yeah, the Reds have great starting pitching. Bullpen's a little shaky. The Reds' problem last year, they couldn't score runs. Their lineup could not score runs. The lineup that they're running out this year, they better put up runs because 1 through 9, it's pretty solid.
You know who else I don't think you can sleep on? I don't think you can sleep on the Cardinals.
Never can sleep on the Cardinals.
No. And going back to what St. Louis accomplished last season, May was what killed them. They peaked around that June through September or July through September mark. Don't forget, this was a team that went to the NLCS. And mm-hmm. We were sitting here on Drive Time Sports thinking, again.
Here we are.
We were talking about the Dodgers. We were talking about the Nationals. We were talking about the Astros. We were talking about the Braves. We were talking about all these teams. We didn't talk about the Cardinals. And there they were in the NLCS because that's exactly what they do. They went 9-18 in May last year. If they can just get off to a decent start, this is an interesting division as well because you also have the Milwaukee Brewers.
Four good teams. They're going to beat up on one another.
You know what? I'm going to take the Cardinals to win the division.
I'm taking Cincinnati for the first time since 2010, division champs.
I'm going to go with the Cardinals. I think in a 60-game season, it's just something they would do.
Yeah, I could see it happening too. I'll take the Reds.
We'll end with the NL West.
Do we have to? LA.
Over under 40 wins for the Dodgers.
Over.
What do you think they go?
42 wins.
If the Dodgers don't win the NL West, it's a complete and utter surprise, and Dave Roberts should lose his job because it has nothing to do other than not managing a 60-game season correctly.
Yeah, they got to fire him. If they don't win that division, you have to fire that guy and move on from him because Arizona is still a little ways away. The Rockies are so far away, and I don't trust the Padres.
Look at what the Dodgers have done in Dave Roberts' time as manager against NL West teams. He has won 58% of his games, or better, a minimum of 58% of his games or better against Arizona, Colorado, San Diego, and San Francisco.
They clean house in that division.
And that's probably what they do again this year.
Yeah, and then they cross over and they get a beat up on the Mariners and the Angels.
Dodgers win this division over 40 games, 41?
Fuck them, 42 wins. They win that division by 10 games.
42-18? That's pretty solid. We got a lot of baseball talk to still get into throughout the remainder of the week. Unfortunately, we are just about out of time on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Tomorrow, we have to have a conversation on the Toronto Blue Jays. Where are they going to play? Pittsburgh?
Pittsburgh's probably
Baltimore?
Pittsburgh's the logical, I guess, with the stadium. You can't play in Buffalo.
I think you have to put them. They have to share a division with an AL East opponent.
Mm-hmm.
Because it limits the amount of travel. I think it's actually not a bad thing for Major League Baseball. No. Baltimore makes sense.
Yeah, Baltimore is great.
But Pittsburgh keeps popping up.
Pittsburgh keeps popping up because of the stadium, and they like that. So we'll see. But that's got to be one of the two. You can't put them in Charlotte or Buffalo.
Canada said they're not playing in Toronto, so they're going to have to find a hub somewhere here in the United States. We'll talk about that on the show tomorrow. I want to thank Coach John Famalo for taking out the time. We're also going to recap the Helper American Legion baseball season with Dakota Cincinnati. That'll be on the show tomorrow. Be safe. We are out.